Second Best by D.H. Lawrence. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2013. Part 1.
Oh, I'm tired, Frances exclaimed petulantly,
and in the same instant she dropped down on the turf near the hedge bottom. Anne stood a moment surprised, then, accustomed to the vagaries of her beloved Frances, said,
"Well, and aren't you always likely to be tired after travelling that blessed long way from Liverpool yesterday?"
And she plumped down beside her sister. Anne was a wise young body of 14, very buxom, brimming with common sense. Frances was much older, about 23, and whimsical, spasmodic. She was the beauty and the clever child of the family. She plucked the goosegrass buttons from her dress in nervous, desperate fashion. Her beautiful profile, looped above with black hair, warm with the dusky and scarlet complexion of a pear, was calm as a mask, her thin brown hand plucked nervously. "It's not the journey," she said, objecting to Anne's obtuseness. Anne looked inquiringly at her darling. The young girl, in her self-confident, practical way, proceeded to reckon up this whimsical creature. But suddenly, she found herself full in the eyes of Frances, felt two dark, hectic eyes flaring challenge at her, and she shrank away. Frances was peculiar for these great, exposed looks, which disconcerted people by their violence and their suddenness.
"What's the matter, poor old duck?" asked Anne, as she folded the slight, wilful form of her sister in her arms.
Frances laughed shakily and nestled down for comfort on the budding breasts of the strong girl.
"Oh, I'm only a bit tired," she murmured, on the point of tears. "Well, of course you are. What do you expect?" soothed Anne.
It was a joke to Frances that Anne should play elder, almost mother to her. But then Anne was in her unvexed teens. Men were like big dogs to her, while Frances, at 23, suffered a good deal. The country was intensely mourning still. On the common, everything shone beside its shadow, and the hillside gave off heat in silence. The brown turf seemed in a low state of combustion. The leaves of the oaks were scorched brown. Among the blackish foliage in the distance shone the small red and orange of the village. The willows in the brook course at the foot of the common suddenly shook with a dazzling effect like diamonds. It was a puff of wind. Anne resumed her normal position. She spread her knees and put in her lap a handful of hazelnuts, whitey green leafy things, whose one cheek was tanned between brown and pink. These she began to crack and eat. Frances, with bowed head, mused bitterly.
"Eh, you know Tom Smedley?"
began the young girl, as she pulled a tight kernel out of its shell. "I suppose so," replied Frances sarcastically.
"Well, he gave me a wild rabbit, what he got, to keep with my tame one, and it's living."
"That's a good thing," said Frances, very detached and ironic.
"Well, it is. He reckoned he'd take me to Ollerton Feast, but he never did. Look here, he took a servant from the rectory. I saw him."
"So he ought," said Frances.
"No, he oughtn't. And I told him so. And I told him I should tell you, and I have done."
Click and snap went a nut between her teeth. She sorted out the kernel and chewed complacently. "It doesn't make much difference," said Frances.
"Well, happen it doesn't, but I was mad with him all the same."
"Why?"
"Because I was. He's no right to go with a servant."
"He's a perfect right," persisted Frances, very just and cold.
"No, he hasn't, when he said he'd take me."
Frances burst into a laugh of amusement and relief.
Oh, no, I'd forgot that, she said, adding, And what did he say when you promised to tell me?
He laughed and said, She won't fret a fat over that.
And she won't, sniffed Frances. There was silence. The common, with its sere, blonde-headed thistles, its heaps of silent bramble, its brown husked gorse in the flare of sunshine seemed visionary. Across the brook began the immense pattern of agriculture, white checkering of barley stubble, brown squares of wheat, khaki patches of pasture, red stripes of fallow, with the woodland and the tiny village dark like ornaments, leading away to the distance, right to the hills, where the check pattern grew smaller and smaller, till, in the blackish haze of heat, far off, only the tiny white squares of barley stubble showed distinct.
Hey, I say, here's a rabbit hole, cried Anne suddenly. Should we watch if one comes out? You won't have to fidget, you know.
The two girls sat perfectly still. Frances watched certain objects in her surroundings. They had a peculiar, unfriendly look about them. The weight of greenish elderberries on their purpling stalks, the twinkling of the yellowing crab apples that clustered high up in the hedge against the sky, the exhausted, limp leaves of the primroses lying flat in the hedge bottom, all looked strange to her. Then her eyes caught a movement. A mole was moving silently over the warm, red soil, nosing, shuffling hither and thither, flat and dark as a shadow, shifting about, and as suddenly brisk and as silent, like a very ghost of joie de vivre. Frances started, from habit was about to call on Anne to kill the little pest. But today, her lethargy of unhappiness was too much for her. She watched the little brute paddling, snuffing, touching things to discover them, running in blindness, delighted to ecstasy by the sunlight and the hot, strange things that caressed its belly and its nose. She felt a keen pity for the little creature.
Eh, our Fran, look there, it's a mole.
Anne was on her feet, standing watching the dark, unconscious beast. Frances frowned with anxiety.
It doesn't run off, does it? Said the young girl softly.
Then she stealthily approached the creature. The mole paddled fumblingly away. In an instant, Anne put her foot upon it, not too heavily. Frances could see the struggling, swimming movement of the little pink hands of the brute, the twisting and twitching of its pointed nose as it wrestled under the sole of the boot.
It does wriggle, said the bonny girl,
knitting her brows in a frown at the eerie sensation. Then she bent down to look at her trap. Frances could now see, beyond the edge of the boot sole, frantic rowing of the flat pink hands. Kill the thing, she said, turning away her face.
Oh, I'm not, laughed Anne, shrinking. You can if you like.
I don't like, said Frances with quiet intensity. After several dabbing attempts, Anne succeeded in picking up the little animal by the scruff of its neck. It threw back its head, flung its long blind snout from side to side, the mouth open in a peculiar oblong, with tiny pinkish teeth at the edge. The blind, frantic mouth gaped and writhed. The body, heavy and clumsy, hung scarcely moving.
Isn't it a snappy little thing? Observed Anne, twisting to avoid the teeth. What are you going to do with it? Asked Frances sharply. It's got to be killed. Look at the damage they do.
I'll take it home and let Dada or somebody kill it. I'm not going to let it go.
She swaddled the creature clumsily in her pocket handkerchief and sat down beside her sister. There was an interval of silence, during which Anne combated the efforts of the mole.
You've not had much to say about Jimmy this time. Did you see him often in Liverpool?
Anne asked suddenly.
once or twice," replied Frances, giving no sign of how the question troubled her.
"And aren't you sweet on him any more, then?"
"I should think I'm not, seeing that he's engaged."
"Engaged? Jimmy Barras? Well, of all things, I never thought he'd get engaged."
"Why not? He's as much right as anybody else," snapped Frances. Anne was fumbling with the mole.
"Up and so," she said at length. "But I never thought Jimmy would, though."
"Why not?" snapped Frances.
"I don't know. Oh, this blessed mole, it'll not keep still. Who's he got engaged to?"
"How should I know?"
"I thought you'd ask him. You've known him long enough. As I think he'd thought he'd get engaged now he's a doctor of chemistry."
Frances laughed in spite of herself. "What's that got to do with it?" she asked.
"I'm sure it's got a lot. He'll want to feel somebody now, so he's got engaged." "Hey, stop it! Go in!"
But at this juncture, the mole almost succeeded in wriggling clear. It wrestled and twisted frantically, waved its pointed blind head, its mouth standing open like a little shaft, its big wrinkled hands spread out.
"Go in with you,"
urged Anne, poking the little creature with her forefinger, trying to get it back into the handkerchief. Suddenly, the mouth turned like a spark on her finger.
"Oh!"
she cried.
"He's bit me!"